Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
BashaniRadio.com is global. You can listen on any computer or mobile device that connects to the internet. Simply go to BashaniRadio.com and click on the show you would like to hear. Then sit back and enjoy yourself with powerful and positive talk radio. BashaniRadio.com, New York City. Always talking about everything.
The fastest growing music app in the U.S. Why? Because we connect you to all of your favorite music and radio stations in one free app. And this fall, prepare to take control of how you listen to the radio.
Replay.
That song on your radio you just can't hear enough? Immediately replay and sing along again.
Save.
Save the music you love on the radio directly to your playlist.
Play.
Search for and play any song on demand.
Skip.
Unlimited skips.
Offline.
Take the music from your favorite stations offline. Introducing iHeartRadio Plus and iHeartRadio All Access. Your radio now on demand.
The new celebration rules are in place and Pepsi is all for it. Antonio, what have you got in mind? Bit of a throwback. Looks like the Charleston. You never see that in football or anywhere.
On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked. Keep it locked. Keep it locked.
Keep it locked. It's the Benny Randall Show. It's the Benny Randall Show. It's the Benny Randall Show. It's the Benny Randall Show.
Welcome to another edition of the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And this powerful show brings you conversations with today's stars and tomorrow's legends. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Come on.
It's the Benny Randall Show. It's the Benny Randall Show.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And like always, you know how you can reach me, right? You can reach me at BennyRandall.com, or you can go to Benny On Demand for my absolutely awesome private community. Here it is, you know what I'm saying? Ladies and gentlemen, like always, we bring you extraordinary shows. And this man we're about to have on, I call him, he's a walking computer before computers was even here. The amount of knowledge that this man has, I believe, even overwhelms him sometimes. So every now and then we have to bring him back to keep him in check. And I told him that basically we're going to stalk him until he leaves this planet, because he's had so much information to give and to leave in his legacy. Because you can't take it with you. You know what I mean? I ain't never seen a U-Haul behind a hearse. Right? But he ain't going nowhere, at least for the next 150 years. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you the one, the only. If there's another, he's a phony. Dennis Speed. Mr. Speed, welcome to the show.
Well, I don't know what to say after that introduction. But I'm sure I'll think of something.
There it is. Mr. Speed, you are a connoisseur of a lot of information, but being one that it is politics with people, if you remember any of our older shows, we used to have a political smackdown, and Mr. Speed was doing the smacking down on some of these people around here. And but we're living in a whole different environment right now. We got a resident. I don't call him the president. Y'all know I don't call him. I call him the resident that's inside of that place. And I think he done lost his mind. That's just my opinion. And opinions expressed here are just those of that come out of my mouth. Not from Bashani Radio, sponsors, advertisers. All right. Mr. Speed, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fine.
Where should we start, Mr. Speed? There's so much going on in this political climate. There is so much going on, Mr. Speed. And the only one who could seem to give us some clarity is you, my friend. How do we get here?
I understand. What would you like to know?
Okay. First and foremost, Mr. Speed, one thing you have been very consistent with, and that is to tell young people to get involved in the process. You have always told, in all the shows I can ever remember, get involved in the process. Because if you don't get involved in the process, you're going to be infected by the process. I'm not sure what happened this time around, but I see a lot of people being infected. Can you give us a little highlight of where we stand right now? And do you think that had more younger people gotten involved, we wouldn't be in this state of circumstances we're in?
Well, I think I should first of all start just to introduce myself to people that would not know us from that set of shows that we actually began doing just about a decade ago, actually just over a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of during the period of 2009, 2010, 11, you know, now quite a while ago, really got into a consistent weekly presentation. So people don't know, I write for a publication called Executive Intelligence Review. This was a publication that was started back in 1974, so that's 43 years ago. And it was directly the product of a particular individual, a statesman and economist named Lyndon LaRouche, very famous at that time, back in the 70s and 80s in particular. But what it dealt with, what the publication dealt with, was presentations of not just alternate analysis, but critiques, thoroughgoing, researched, upendings is the way to put it, the upendings of what appeared to be the narrative, as they call it, that people were trying to pass off as reality. And so this did not deal with being on the left or being on the right. You know, I used to make a joke about that, that there were really, it wasn't about them being left or right, but being above. So you could see from above that there was not necessarily a left or a right. And so we began that back then. Mm. And so when we look at this phase that we're in now, there's the best way to think about it is, suppose you drop a pebble or a rock in the lake. You watch the ripples that go off that pebble or rock. Now, think about time that way. Think about the rock as being the present, and think about the ripples as being, for example, the period of 2012, 5 years ago, or the period of 2007, 10 years ago, the period of 2001, 16 years ago. And if you look at that way and think of yourself as being that rock that's in the middle, you realize that there's a rippling effect. And instead of thinking about the ripples going out, like when you drop the pebble in the pond, think about it as though the ripples are coming in. So it's going the other way. Mm-hmm. And so that in order for you to have a comprehension of what's going on right now, you have to have at least a familiarity with the core events, the crucial turning points of these other ripples in time. Now,
so in other words, like if you're like an ocean and it's hitting a wall, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And but those waves that hit the wall are also waves that's been there for a minute, so they go back into the system and new waves come here, so you continue to have a ripple effect. But mm-hmm. there's things that can happen in that water to cause, one, the water to rise, two, to have a tsunami,
mm-hmm.
or three, like we've seen in some places, to completely dry out.
Right. You have ebb and flow, and you can also have what you just described as the shock effect of a tsunami, where, you know, one of the reasons that a lot of people get killed in a tsunami is that the water actually goes back into the ocean. It recedes.
Mm-hmm.
And often people think that the water is gone, but actually what's happening is, and they can't see it from on the surface, what they're about to see is a surge of that entire ocean. And it may go, it may come on the land for miles.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be able to not just see a one action by itself. So, for example, we talked about time just briefly, and we talked about 2017 and then 2012 when, for example, Hurricane Sandy happened here on the East Coast, 2007 when you had the beginnings of what became the stock market crash of that time, the banking system collapsed in 2007-2008. And then 2001, World Trade Center. And I just named those because those are all available, mentally available to everybody, including if you're 17 years old or 18 years old,
mm-hmm.
you can think about that. And the reason I'm saying it that way, Mr. Randall, is because people are trying to judge the response or the reaction or the results of a particular electoral cycle. It doesn't work that way. There's a cycle in time, and now there's a cycle in space I'm going to pull out.
Mm-hmm.
China, over that period of time, that 17 years we just talked about,
mm-hmm.
became the most powerful, most efficient, most productive economy in the world, bar none. Bar none.
Really?
Now, the United States is still the largest, but the most powerful from the standpoint of the driving capability,
mm-hmm.
scientifically and technologically, is China.
And I seen it was ironic because I seen a little documentary that was speaking of how China has infiltrated some of the Caribbean islands like Jamaica, and they are blowing so much money into the system that they're saying in less than 10 years, Jamaica will be like the first colony of China because of the amount of investments that they are putting into that area. And they are not actually hiring the people that live in that area. They're actually hiring Chinese people. And they were saying how, you know, most people are just selling their properties and kind of moving away. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I know that's the case now. But you see, something's going to change again, even in that. But I'll come back to that.
Okay.
But I think what's important is, the question is, how did that happen? Because if, you know, the United States bailed out the banks, as apparently it did in 2007, 2008, if we spent over $1 trillion, you know, $880 billion was the official figure.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you went, as Bernie Sanders and others showed with the their audit at the Federal Reserve the year after, that is in 2009 and 10, when they did the audit, they concluded that there was about $16.7 trillion that went into that. How is it possible that if that was done to bail out the system, why wasn't the United States any longer the dominant power, including in areas where historically the United States was always top dog, like the Caribbean,
mm-hmm.
or like Central America? How's that possible?
Did they bail? My question is then, by you saying that, did they bail out the banks with borrowed money?
Well, the issue with clearly something different happened. that would be, I think, right, see that, because nobody's talking about the United States. We're talking about China.
Right.
In South America and Central America and the Caribbean, everybody knows that was traditionally the backyard of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So you asked a very important question. Did they bail it out with borrowed money, and what did that mean? Well, let's consider that the United States owes China at least $1 trillion. Let's consider that the United States owes Japan over $1 trillion. And so, now that's interesting, because we don't think about Japan doing these things we now attribute to the Chinese, but 35 years ago we were saying that about the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because at that time, that was when the Japanese auto dealers first got access to the American market. And there was a big war back in the 70s, first of all, against all that. But by the time you got to the 80s, the war was over. And now, of course, you drive down any American highway, and we all know, well, you got everybody. You got the Koreans with Kias, you got the Japanese, you have very relatively few Americans drive American cars.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pointing this out just to get people who've never heard us before, Mr. Randall, to kind of just sit back for a minute and realize that there's a way to think, which is not in, put it like this. Instead of thinking about lines of change, in other words, like today is today, tomorrow is tomorrow, we're going to look in a line in the future. Just try to see the future as a straight line from now to 5 years from now, or from now to the next election. That is the wrong way to look at things. The right way is to look at things as though they're part of a spiral of change, and that the spiral, it goes up or goes down, could go either direction. But the way to understand yourself is not to try to pinpoint yourself on that particular line that we're talking about. Oh, I'm here right now, and all I can deal with is what we can see immediately in the future. But then you're dead. That doesn't work. But if you think of yourself as being not your position, but where you're moving to, how you're moving along a spiral either of development or decay,
mm-hmm.
You see that the United States has been in a decline, man, and it's been going on for a long time. So when we say the Chinese are going to colonize this or colonize that, well, the truth of the matter is that the power, the energy, the force, the impulse, positive upward impulse, the upshift physically of the U.S. economy has not been with us for over not only a decade, not only two decades, actually five decades. And see that it's always hidden by saying the U.S. makes money, and it does. But it makes money by creating money. And you've said it before, you're borrowing. So you are not really producing your way forward. You're borrowing your way forward.
Boom. And if you're just joining us, you are listening to the Benny Randall Show right here on Pashani Radio and iHeartRadio Worldwide. You can also find us on Amazon Echo and on iTunes, but most importantly at PashaniRadio.com and iHeartRadio Worldwide. We're speaking to Mr. Dennis Speed. You know, I call him the walking computer of information. And we're talking about the economy at this point in the conversation. Let us continue, Mr. Speed. Let me ask you this now. Bring us up to speed. That's kind of funny. Bring us up to where we are right now. Explain what is going on with the economy at this particular moment.
All right.
What's about to happen.
Okay. Here's the concept that people have to try to wrap their head around, and this one is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
For this to really be understood, I would refer people, particularly those who have never seen it, and for those who have, I would invite you to revisit the first particularly 30 minutes of the old now 20-year-old film, The Matrix, because everybody has been taught to focus on the personage of Barack Obama and the personage of Donald Trump or other personages. So as you see, for example, in something like what's going on that right now with Harvey Weinstein.
Mm-hmm.
So people name, right? You name somebody, right? And everybody says, oh, yeah, this guy, what the? But the dynamic, the underlying dynamic is actually avoided. So let's take a look at something. If you take from September 11th of 2001 to now, and you look at American economic and military policy, what you will see is that despite the different people called the President of the United States, the policy of the United States that it pursued, particularly from September 11th, has now resulted in the United States deploying troops in 172 out of 195 countries in the world.
Wow.
But check this out, Mr. Randall. There's another 38,000 troops that are deployed. These are special forces of various types.
Mr. Speak, doesn't that make us stretch very thin?
And this is what we're about to get to. It's called having an influence which is a mile wide.
Wow.
And an inch deep.
Wow. I wasn't. Can you repeat that number for my listeners who may have not got that?
I will repeat that number again,
right quick.
I will do it, and I'll add something to it. Of the 195 countries and also territories, because a few places are called territories, not countries, in the world, the mm-hmm. whole world, the United States is militarily deployed in 172 of them.
That blows my mind right there. That's freaking amazing. Seems like a.
Obviously, you can't do that.
I'm gonna let you speak. Go ahead.
It's just an interesting thing because, in other words, if you look at the U.S. military budget, now we're talking about the official budget. Now we're not even talking about the black budget, the dark budget, as they call it. Right? Just the official budget is the size of the next 25 countries combined.
Wow.
Combined, yeah. So what has happened is we shifted from production for our people and by our people and of our people. We shifted from that, which is where we used to be back about 1945, 50, 55, 60, in that period. We shifted to becoming a military producing state and then farmed out all the industry to all these other places, whereas the United States now, overextending itself, right, has become reliant upon creditors in other places. And as a consequence, the percentage of the budget that goes to pay debt has constantly risen, whereas the percentage of the budget that's actually being deployed for real physical productivity in our country, roads, bridges, highways, tunnels, dams, healthcare, hospitals, meaning schools, has constantly diminished.
But Mr. Speed, doesn't that make it as backwards? Excuse my French, ladies and gentlemen, sorry. But that sounds so backwards. It's hard to like manifest that. It just seems backwards that you would spend so much money on something that is not producing revenue. That's like having a business where you basically just spend, but you never actually make sales. That's the best way I can see it.
Yes. But now let's try to get inside of the mind of the people that were doing it to understand it. I can refer everybody to a scene, because you can probably get this on YouTube, from the very old now Oliver Stone movie, JFK, which came out in 1991. Okay, this is way back. But there's a scene about two-thirds of the way through the movie where the prosecutor, whose name is, or district attorney, actually, who is Jim Garrison, who is the person that was investigating the assassination. He's having a conversation, and I think probably when you go on YouTube, it will say Mr. X, because he talks to a guy named Mr. X. And Mr. X is basically like an intelligence agent who's from what people would now call the deep state. And he's going to like tell Jim Garrison, who's played by Kevin Costner, he's going to, and the other character is played by Donald Sutherland, okay? And he's going to tell Garrison, Costner in this case, the real deal. Because, you know, Garrison thinks, hey, Kennedy is killed by somebody, maybe a lone assassin, but and so what this gentleman does is he tells him that, no, Kennedy is being killed because he decided that he did not want to support the radical expansion of the American military worldwide, and he was going to shut down the Vietnam War. I made it go through the whole thing, long thing. But the main point I want to make in bringing this up, here's the way they think. War is a win-win for the munitions and weapons manufacturers and for the banking establishment that loans the money. Because both sides need money. So you don't really care who wins, because after the winner will usually come out owing more debt than the loser.
And we all know, like, if they keep you in debt, you keep a high credit score.
That's right.
That's exactly how it is.
See? So the concept they had was, let's just keep the wars going down. And if we can keep more wars going on, there's all kinds of military equipment we can sell. You know, like we can come up with a way to detect the component parts of improvised explosive devices, IEDs, as they call them. And if we can do that, then we can trace back the parts, and we can find out where they're manufactured, and we can go after the people manufacturing the parts. Oh, yeah, we can create software and sensors that can help us determine how and where these component parts are made. See, now, so I got a whole cottage industry going on something like that. Or, you know, battlefield wounds and how to treat battlefield wounds. So, in other words, what I end up doing is I make a set of subsidiary industries out of, right, repairing the troops or selling the weapons or how to blow somebody up or how to protect yourself from being blown up, you know, body armor, blah, 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 blah. Huh? And therefore, I must have an enemy. I must invoke an enemy. And I must invoke a reason that the enemy is so powerful. I've got to be given power over the purse strings.
Are you referring to someone like a North Korea?
Well, I'm saying the following. I'm saying that all three, that up to now, let me be very concrete. See, a lot of people are having problems, they think, with Donald Trump. Well, actually, what just happened, what he just did last week, where he said, you know, I talked to Vladimir Putin. He told me he didn't do this. Some people pointed out to me that if he did do it, he would have gotten away with it, because that's how slick the Russians are. So, you know, and the problem I've got, Trump didn't say this, I actually come back to what the issue is, because Trump said something very specific that people don't know about. I'm going to tell your audience. And this was said about a month before he went. But that's about.
Are we talking about the Asia trip?
The Asia trip, right. We're saying before he left, Trump had spoken to the head of the CIA. This is a guy named Mike Pompeo. He's the head of the CIA. He tells Pompeo, listen, I think you have to talk to a particular individual, and he named him, and his name was Bill or William Binney, B-I-N-N-E-Y. Bill Binney had been the top code breaker at the National Security Agency back in the period of when 9/11 happened.
I seen the Netflix documentary. It was powerful.
Okay, you've seen it. You know what it is. Yes. So the deal is, Trump says, talk to this man. Now, Mike Pompeo, even though he didn't say anything directly, as far as I know, would have known exactly who William Binney was. And what he would have known is, here's the problem with talking to Binney. If you talk to Binney, Binney is the guy that also had a system that would have detected 9/11 before it happened.
That's the threat system, right?
Yeah, Thin Thread. That was the name of the system, Thin Thread. Okay, and basically, it, without going through all the details of it, he had figured out, get ready to get scared, he had figured out how to basically, in real time, monitor every cell phone in the world. In the world. And most other electronic devices. And it was in literally near real time. I think he had more or less kind of like a delay of an hour or 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, right? And so Benny's whole point was, when I do this, I don't want to listen to everybody's conversation. I don't need to do that. I've got to be a traffic analyst, that's what he called himself. What that meant was, I'm looking at patterns of change in the traffic. So I'm not trying, if I know that there's, you know, 1 billion people using phones and they really have not ever done anything except vote in the election, maybe,
mm-hmm.
I'm not looking at them. I'm just not doing that. I don't need to. I look at some other people, and I'm looking at designated people that may have certain interests, and it changes in what they're doing.
I think he referred to it as he was looking for more like the relationships.
Yeah, he called it the metadata. That's what it's called.
Yeah, the metadata. Yeah, okay. He was talking about the relationships of who talked to who and why. Something to that.
Yeah,
aspect.
Yeah. Why and why does it change? In other words, who do you talk to? How many times you talk to somebody? Who do you talk down to, and who do you talk up to? Is there a change in the pattern of who you are suddenly talking to over and over? And all they had to do, in other words, is if they had anybody that was remotely suspicious,
mm-hmm.
they were recording. See, they could retrieve your whole record going back a certain number of years, whatever, and just pull it. So if they saw something around you that was, they call it, anomalous, the word they would use, right, unusual, then they would pull your entire call history. They wouldn't have to listen to your conversation. They just look at the change in your conversations. And then at some point, they would tap into one of the previous conversations. So I'm not saying that made the system good for us. Because, I mean, this is like everybody in the world. Everything you're saying is all there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're trying to find terrorism, his point was, the information will have been captured at some point by the system, because these guys got to coordinate using electronic devices. Otherwise, you know, because at some point, even the first get together to then say, okay, we're not going to use cell phones, you'd have to get together. See, so that's what he invented. Now, the reason I'm saying this is that Donald Trump is the first president publicly challenge his own people, which is what he did coming back on that plane.
No, but I heard he did that over the seas too. Like, you know, the first time in a foreign country that a president kind of challenged his own intelligence agency.
That's what I'm saying.
And it was very disrespectful in that manner, because it was almost like you were saying that he is, I believe him before I believe, I think he referred to Brennan as hacks or something like that.
That's right. That's right. That's what he said. I mean, Trump said that. But now you got to ask yourself this question. Remember that Trump, on the second day he was in the presidency, said he was going to go after the 17 intelligence agencies. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Then 2 days after he said that, Chuck Schumer of New York got on a Sunday talk show. I think it might have been 3 days after. But he said, well, the intelligence community, meaning all these agencies, FBI, CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, NSA, National Security Agency, all the various alphabet agencies, that these people, this is now Chuck Schumer talking, he said, they got seven ways Sunday to take you down. So, right? So what has been going on, the main thing that's been going on since Trump got elected is his war with those people. See, now people are caused to call pay attention to a lot of other stuff. And I want to be very clear with you, because I just hosted an event yesterday, just for your listeners to know, where Bill William Binney, the person that Trump named, did a public event yesterday with some other people. He's saying he knows for a fact there could not have been a Russian hack of the DNC, the Democratic Party's computer, which is the whole big thing. Whenever they talk about Russian collusion, that's where it first started. So, because supposedly the Russians were trying to get Trump elected, and they did this thing, and somehow they were able to be traced to do it. And Trump's point is, when he talked to Putin, one of the things that people pointed out is, if Vladimir Putin is doing that, he ain't gonna get caught doing it.
Right. Well, I mean, it's too many moving parts. And let me just interject. Right. We're at the halfway point here, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking to Dennis Speed. You're listening to The Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And we'll be right back after this short break. One, two, three. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just joining us, we are talking to Mr. Dennis Speed, and it's getting real hot up in here. We're at the halfway point. If you miss any of this show, make sure you download it, rewind it, whatever you want to do. It is here for your enjoyment and edutainment, as we like to say, to drop this information on you. And remember, you got Google. You can, anything that you want to challenge on Mr. Speed, Google it, man. Go the information. One thing I could say about Mr. Speed, he's not afraid to back up anything that he says. So, and you know, that's how I found out about the Netflix documentary, which I went on to watch it because I wanted to see it. All right. So we're going to go back to Mr. Speed. Well, you dropped off. Let me ask you this question, Mr. Speed, too, because there's a couple questions I do want to get in, too, because it's, you know, the stuff you're dropping is pretty deep. But I want to ask some very poignant questions. Why was Trump put into office?
Why was he elected?
Yep. Because, and let me tell you why I asked you that. Because a long time ago, you alluded to that things are done before they happen. Who's going to be the next president, et cetera, et cetera. You alluded to that a long time ago. I never forgot that.
Yeah, right. So my, it's the same reason. Right.
My question is,
I'm sorry.
Is,
why was he elected?
Yes. Why was he put into office? Because I don't know if he was elected, but why was he put into office?
Yeah, well, the same reason. Well, no, let me put it a little bit differently, because that'll be too abstract. Let's note that George Bush, GW, Bush 43, was also put into office. In January of 2001, just so people have an idea about this, Linda LaRouche gave a talk in Washington. And what he said was, well, the economic situation that these people are coming into is so messed up that what's going to happen to straighten it out is that they're going to have a provocation. And he referred to what happened when the way Hitler came to power, became a dictator in 1933 in Germany, which is that there was a fire at the what it would be their Congress building. They called it the Reichstag, but it was the same thing as the Congress, U.S. Congress would be. A fire happened in the building, and Hitler used it to declare a state of emergency, and he assumed dictatorial powers. This was in February of 1933. He'd been elected in January, on January 30th. And then what happened was that before the end of February, just before, this fire broke out inside of the congressional offices. And they actually only found one guy who himself had some mental problems who had lit a fire. But they used that to change all the laws in Germany. And they gave Hitler supreme power. And prior to that time, he had been elected, but he was not a dictator. But once the fire happened, boom, you know, we got a new situation. So
okay.
What LaRouche was saying, and
go ahead,
let me just get the point. That he said, you're going to need something like that to put the country under control. Now, 9/11, which was several months later, happened. And while nobody exactly predicted 9/11, not exactly, even Alex Jones said some things, some other people said some things. The point is,
I can't believe
that
you said
as
that,
of 9/11, everything got changed. Everything got changed.
Mm-hmm. So are we using the fear factor again to get what they want? Is that where you're leading to in this?
I'm saying the same thing was done with Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying it was never actually different because the United States now has the issue of the Trump business is actually more interesting because the Trump thing was not supposed to happen. That is, he did run. And he was running, as we now know from what we got from Hillary and what was going on there. There was a different, you know, she assumed she was going to be elected. And even though the DNC thing had happened, she still assumed it. So, and matter of fact, virtually everybody assumed it. And then it didn't happen all of a sudden. So what that was about is I think there's something to understand about the times we live in and always have.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't mean if people voted for Obama that in no way was their vote counted. It didn't mean anything. It just means that the same dynamic that went on there is not actually different than the dynamic that went on in 2016. It's just that people had different political views. So therefore they said, oh no, this is really completely the opposite of what happened with us. Whereas exactly, it's very much what happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same politics, but it was the same surprising groundswell. It was the same thing. People said, well, it isn't really going on. But then Hillary lost all these states. And already know she lost, particularly Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, right? She just lost those flat out. And the important point, though, is the personality Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
the personality Hillary Clinton, personality Barack Obama, the personality George W. Bush, that ain't where everything is happening. Where it's happening is there's a dynamic in the country. And the dynamic is also in the world. And that's why I keep talking about China. Because China is saying, I'm not saying they are the enemy, I'm saying something different. China cannot blow the U.S. up with nuclear weapons. And they don't want the U.S. to blow them up. They know the U.S. can blow any country in the world, in fact, the whole world, off the face of the earth. All countries could be destroyed by the United States. So nobody really wants to tangle with the United States. What they want is some set of economic arrangements where they can benefit and where the United States has to also benefit because if it doesn't benefit, then it can start war.
Mm.
And so, see, Trump is doing this. Remember his show. Think about The Apprentice. And think about the way in which that whole thing goes down. And I'm going to say this about this. Trump is not the Trump that people keep seeing, as various people from hip-hop and so on have often talked about him. The Trump that people see that provokes and does this and does that, that Trump is going to wants to walk out of his presidency with the most powerful, biggest, most elaborate, and most productive economic deal in history. And he thinks he can get that from the Chinese. And that is what is going on.
That is a joke. So
actually, it's not.
No,
hold on. But here's why it's not.
Mm-hmm.
No, but here's why it's not. The Chinese have the capability to deliver on that. And for their own reasons and for reasons of peace, they would do it. And that's what gets interesting.
But you remember, China is the only one holding North Korea at bay because my understanding is that they supply more than 90% of the the well-being of North Korea. Is that true or not true?
No, the North Korea thing is completely different. North Korea is starving. North Korea has been starving, actually off and on, for about 15 to 20 years.
All right, so then that's nothing new then.
Well, there's one thing. There's one thing. The North Koreans have one thing to negotiate with, nuclear weapons. Because there's nothing else that they have to offer, although, let me put it a little bit differently. When Bill Clinton was president, Bill Clinton started a set of negotiations with North Korea that were going along. It wasn't just Bill Clinton. Japan was involved. Russia was involved. China was involved. North and South Korea. All right? So there were basically six powers that were involved in doing this. And the idea was very simple, was that they were going to get rid of the nuclear weapons in exchange for having some nuclear power reactors so that it didn't look, first of all, for power, but also so that it didn't look as though they had just been stripped. Because you can't do that to a nation, right? Okay, this was all going fine. Everything was cool. Everything was, for 3-4 years, the negotiations had proceeded. But when Bush and Cheney, after 9/11, start their axis of evil, axis of evil is who? It's Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. Okay. So now all those negotiations stop. Then what happens is that the Libyans turn over their weapons of mass destruction during 2003. Bush invades Iraq, where there are no weapons of mass destruction that he describes. And then what happens is that Libya, gives up its stuff. North Korea is looking at what happened to Iraq and says, well, we ain't giving up our stuff. But then Libya gets wiped out, too, in 2011. And at this point, the Koreans say, oh, wait, you can forget that. We are not giving up our nuclear weapons. No way. Or biochemical weapons or anything else we have that we think poses a threat to you. Because everybody else that gives these up or doesn't have them, then you end up taking those places over. It ain't going to happen to us.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, Mr. Speed,
yeah,
we're coming down to about the last minute, and I don't even think we touched the, the tip of the pie here. But here's what I want you to do in this last 15 minutes here. I want you to give my listeners, who of a generation behind your generation, well, we may be far behind your two generations behind your generations. What should we be paying attention to? Tell us the most important things we need to start paying attention to right now.
I can tell you something you can do. I can tell you something that all these people can do. Let me tell you one thing about being anything between the age of 12 and 25 right now. Because we had this discussion, you may remember, Mr. Randall, actually about 2006, we started to have the discussion. And I said in the elections, it was in October, exactly 11 years ago at the end of October, and I told you that the young people were going to play a primary role in the upcoming presidential elections. It would begin to emerge in the November 2006 election, but it wouldn't be a factor until 2008. I'm going to tell you right now that same thing is going to happen in 2020. The same exact thing I told you then is going to happen in 2020. 2018, you're going to see a few things. And I'll come to what that's going to be. Here's what the thing is we got that's completely different in the world than when you and I first started having these conversations. And this will help amuse some of your young listeners, because it was you who brought me into the 21st century, okay, in the days when I had just barely gotten the flip phone. and didn't even know what a podcast was.
There it is.
And we had a conversation. I'd like people to hear this. You see, we talked for about an hour and a half, and I didn't say anything. I just kept asking you questions, because I realized when we first started talking, you were coming from a completely different world than I knew anything about. And I also realized that there was one thing about older generations. They never want to learn anything from somebody young.
Correct.
And even if they do, they have to adapt it to their thing. So, like, they lose all the life gets sucked out of it. See? So it's like all old people on Facebook, you know, and say, oh, I'm on Facebook. Like, that's a big thing. You know, young people might visit Facebook. They might use it. But, you know, they're off doing all kinds of other things.
Right. There's so many platforms between Instagram and Snapchat. It's so many ways to communicate, even ones that you probably never even heard of right now.
Exactly. You know, exactly. So that and that's a useful thing in the sense that that actual interchange, interaction, and so on via that means is one factor. But I'm going to tell you why this can happen and should happen again. Here's where we are. The party systems are gone. Republican and Democratic Party as systems, those things are obsolete. What people want. And I think they need and they should get. What people want, need, and should get is individual candidates for office that may come from a certain tradition, right? But see, they're running something where you know that the person genuinely is real about what they're putting forward to you.
Mm-hmm.
They may not know that much. They can't be ignorant, but they may not know that much. And they can be wrong on certain things, but you will support them because you know that really is your, you know, like Tulsi Gabbard is a person like that, okay, out in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Tulsi Gabbard, right? Because she will take positions which basically she believes in. So she said, we are causing terrorism in Syria because we are arming terrorists in Syria. So she sponsored the Stop Arming Terrorists in Syria Act. Okay? Okay, fine. But she also thought that what was going on with the pipeline, by the way, was wrong. And so she went up to the North Dakota, you know, on the pipeline check. So, all right. So one position seems to be, not that it was radical, but it was, you know, they seem to be different. She has other things like that. So she's a genuine individual. You can disagree with her, but she's actually going to give you a reason for what she's doing.
So what do you think what do you think about all those candidates? I'm just trying to jump in because I want to make sure we get some of these other questions answered too.
So I'll just summarize on that. Go ahead.
Okay. What do you think about this November 7th that's just passed? And a lot of unorthodox races, people who were the incompetent, you know, just basically incompetent, getting beat by people who had little or no experience in, for instance, the transgender young lady. Also, the African-American lady who challenged her by saying that women, you know, they're out here protesting, you know, are they going to have time to be in the kitchen? She didn't like that. She challenged him and then she won. What that says is that things can happen if people get out and get active more than just standing in the streets or whatever. But I remember a long time ago, you gave a very good lesson on how to get involved in your local races, and people should really Google some of that stuff. That is like gold mine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I see it happen before. So that's why I'm asking you, you know, the things we need to be focused on right now, and what can my generation that is listening to this do something solid.
Okay.
To make a difference.
Let's do 3 minutes. 3 minutes on that to be clear.
Thank you, sir.
Here's what you got. You want to realize that this is the first, or maybe the second, but certainly the first time that generations of young people are simultaneously international and local. And because of the combination of social media and access that they have to things. Now, let's go back to William Binney's system, thin thread. See, instead of trying to think about all the information you need to know to run for office or something like that, mm-hmm. no, think about the relationships you want to have among nations and among states in America and then among people. And then think about, okay, now what do I have as an individual and what do I lack as an individual such that I would, for example, myself make a candidate for office? Now, you know, if I had to straighten out what I think is wrong, mm-hmm. what do I need to know and who do I have to be in relationship to? That's number one. Now, finding out what to do in the local areas is not that difficult. I know how to do that. That's another topic for another time. We can go through that with people. But the concept is this. We ought to have a situation where instead of having third parties, you should have a third force, a new force. What does that mean? You find people, and it could be 10 people, it could be 100 people, it could be 1,000. And these people decide that they're going to run as a slate for office. They have a concept of mm-hmm. where they want to see the country go, right? And so we say, all right, we can see that there are four people in these different places, but let's point something out. Very simple thing. If you want to deal with the problem of pollution, particularly using a lot of gasoline and things like that, what about the idea of high-speed rail? We've seen some of this in Europe. We've seen a lot of it in Japan. We've seen mm-hmm. a lot of it in China.
Absolutely.
Boom. So, all right? So now you know, you because you travel. So you're taking a plane between New York and Boston. Come on, you can take a high-speed train that can go 250 miles an hour. That makes you, the trip's going to be an hour if you're doing that. The amount of gas that you're wasting, okay, and then the problem of even going to and from the airport. See, that all gets absorbed, not to mention the number of cars you can take off the street in terms of being used for at least for long distance or what we'll call middle distance. I'm not even talking about electric cars, and all that. So that's a project that everybody can get behind.
Mm-hmm.
Because why? Because jobs, new skills, deals with the pollution problem. What the hell, right? Why not? So I'm saying, if you have a national slate of candidates, and they young people, and I'm talking about today here, right? Because we're talking about doing something that just makes sense for everybody. So instead of going to a party, here's the punchline. You do it through the internet. You can do it through the colleges. There's something over about 3,500 approximately, I think, colleges in the United States, institutions of higher learning. Well, that's your base. So you use that. Then you got your internet platforms, various types. Then you have subsidiaries. So what we could do, if we wanted, is we could do seminars or classes or whatever. And then get into this, and I'll give you what it would be, and this will be my final thing. Step one, set up a situation where we can re-employ the American people, particularly working people.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a lot of stuff to do that way, okay? Step two, if the Chinese want to help, let's do something very simple. They got $1 trillion of American money. Let's have the Chinese reinvest that, but not in the sense that they own portions of America. Don't do it that way. We just say, okay, you guys got high-speed rail. We need high-speed rail. Why don't we produce components that you can use for expanding your high-speed rail system? Because we got to build those anyway for our system. So instead of you owning our businesses, we will have what that's called forward-based contracting. It means that you contract now for something you're going to deliver in 2021, for example. And you refurbish American plants. You put people back to work. You have a correlate capitalization from this government, which is like a matching fund, just like we did in the bailout. We had $1 trillion with the bailout. You take $1 trillion, just like we did for the bank, and you take the trillion from China, you take the trillion from Japan, you have $1 trillion from America, and you say, okay, let's look at every community in America right now, poor areas, et cetera. Let's look at where we need to put people back to work. Let's look at where we got the skills already. Let's incorporate veterans. And thus let us use the Army Corps of Engineers, where you have a high level of skill, mm-hmm. to do crash programs to qualify young people, now we're talking about, as engineers or engineering assistants. We're talking about physical engineering now on construction, chemical engineering. We're talking about rebuilding of factories and so on, a lot of on-the-job training. Because what does it do? It absorbs the poorest. And it also gives college graduates who have no place to go an alternative right, as not just a stopgap, but even a career change move as we go to the second phase. Now, there's a second phase. We won't get into it right now. That's the kind of thing that becomes electorally, politically viable. And only now can you do that kind of thing. And that's what young people can do.
Very, very powerful. Oh, man, this hour went by incredibly, incredibly fast, Mr. Speed. So, you know, we'll have to bring you back on at some point because I don't even think you got to touch it as much as you because you like to be clear about what you say. So and I can respect that. In your final words, Mr. Speed, what the hell is going on right now and what can we do about it?
The main thing is, you see, people should not ever lose hope.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to understand that your independence, your own declaration, the thing that people should do after this show, go download the American Declaration of Independence, all right? Read the first part of it, which is before they get to the list of grievances. It's got a very few paragraphs at the beginning. And what you ought to do, sign it. Read it and sign it.
Mm. You heard that,
the
ladies and gentlemen.
Of you doing.
Read it and read sign it. Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty deep.
Yeah.
Mr. Speed, in your parting words, in the climate,
I think
we're in right now, you said people should not give up hope.
Right.
All right. So what can people like in my generation look forward to beyond the hope?
I'm going to tell you this. 2026 will be the 250th birthday of this country. You could decide that you wanted to eliminate all poverty in the United States by that time. You know why? Because the Chinese say they're going to eliminate it by that time. Now, if they can do it there, how come you can't do that in the United States? I mean, these people have lifted 700 million people out of poverty. That's twice the whole population of the United States.
Wow.
They got a communist system, and you're saying you can't do it here? That's what you can look forward to, and that's what you should demand. And you know what will happen? Then you find out, and everybody will find out who Donald Trump is. Everybody will find out who they are, find out who the senators are, the congressmen, find out who everybody is. That's what you can do.
Mm. Very, very powerful, like always, Mr. Speed. And we're definitely going to have you bring you back on because I know you didn't even really get to touch the Bennett situation. But tell people about that documentary that you suggested I see and where they can go see it because I seen it on Netflix. Tell people just a little about that documentary. And because I thought it was very, very intriguing, things I didn't never know. And I never knew there was one man that was basically so, according to what I seen in that documentary, solely responsible for being able to, and his way up, his roundabout of getting information was like his mind is incredible.
Yeah, man, but here's what I just say. People, you know, remember the X-Men, right? Remember the guy was in Mr. X, Dr. X in a wheelchair?
Uh-huh.
That's like William Binney, right? He's in a wheelchair, okay? And he's bald, you know. But he's a very nice guy. I was just with him last night. Okay, just had him with dinner last night. So when people get the movie, it's called A Good American. That's the name of it, A Good American.
Right.
Get it on Netflix. And what you will see is he describes how he invented this system and how when he was trying to tell people what it was, they said it was impossible. He said, because you just can't do that number of calculations. You know, if you're talking about a trillion plus possible permutations, if you take the 2 billion devices that are in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he said this, I'm going to leave people there because this is it. He said, if you look into it, they show you the stars in the sky at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, it's the voice you're hearing, he says, well, if you take the universe at any time, the number of atoms in the universe is limited. It's finite. He said, now, if I take those 2 billion phones or other electronic devices, he said, That's real small. Do you know you can count that? Now, you got to understand what kind of a mind-blowing idea that is. But his point was you have to wrap your mind around what you think is infinite. He said, because there are no infinities of that type. They can all be bounded. They can all be surrounded, in other words. They can all be comprehended by the human mind. And so from there, he developed a system. So I'm going to leave people with this concept. Take a look at his film, because the whole point of it was he was not allowed to use this to defend the American people. He had it. It was ready to go. It was going to cost $9 million. They offered that man $3.2 billion to build it. He said, I don't need that. I can build it with $9 million. And then they got mad because that meant they weren't going to get the money, which meant people were not going to get payoff. And therefore, between that and other reasons, they wouldn't allow him to deploy it. So take a look at that, because I think if that is seen by people, when we have our next conversation, there's a whole other level to which we can take this.
Yeah, I know it opened my eyes and seeing that he wanted to create something that was a service to others, and he got stopped. That seemed like every door, even when they became an without giving too much away here, but even when they became an independent company, mm-hmm. they were still stopped at every door mm-hmm. the moment people recognized that they were in it, because part of it, from what I get, is that they felt that it would be an embarrassment to those who supposed to be at the top of the game, and they could absolutely not have that happen.
Yep, exactly.
Did I receive that correct? Did I receive that information?
You got it right. That's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened.
Well,
that's exactly what happened. And I'll just tell you that last night here in New York, we were over at Giga Space, Simpsons Space, they had the largest audience that they've ever had.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The thing we did was the biggest audience they had. We had about 400 people. Wasn't huge.
So what was that? Was that the four? Was that the only one time he was going to be here?
Well, what happened was everybody got a standing ovation at the end of the damn movie. At the end of the movie, and so people were talking about him coming back. So we'll have to see. I think he'll come back.
Well, please let us know. Please let us know.
I will definitely do that.
And let us know. You know, I hope I won't be on crunches then. So, but I appreciate it though, Mr. Speed. Like always, my friend. I thank you for giving us your time. I told you I'm gonna stalk you until you leave this planet, and I mean that. So, I just wanted to put that on record.
Well, yeah. Thank you for that. Let's just hope that's not for a while.
No, because you know what I said, Mr. Speed. You know,
I know what you mean.
When we first started off, I just said you can't die with this information, because it doesn't serve anybody if you die with it. It just doesn't. You know, but as long as we put it out there, you know, and even if you want to go back to some old shows, all you got to do is like Google, you know, political SmackDown, and you would see Dennis' name pop up on quite a few things. You know, I was doing that earlier before we got in this conversation, so just to see what was out there, and there's a lot of stuff around though. So, Mrs. B, like always, man, I really appreciate. If people want to reach out to you, my friend, how can they do that?
Like I always say, man, look at it's Dennis H as in Hannibal or Henry, Dennis H Speed. @yahoo.com. Just get me like that.
Yeah, he said it right, Hannibal.
I just messing with people.
He said it right. He just told on himself, ladies and gentlemen. Right here. Worldwide. He just told on himself, okay? And if you know anything about Hannibal, that should explain it to you right there, okay?
But you know, the old one, the ancient one, you know, the warrior.
Yeah. Okay. I like how he cleaned that one up right there, right? Mr. Speed, like always, my friend, I appreciate you. Thank you for being on the Benny Randall Show, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
And happy to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here once again on the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And like always, you know you can reach out to me at BennyRandall.com, or you can reach out to me at Benny On Demand in our private community. Or if you want to just hear some of these shows and all the other shows, you can go to BashaniRadio.com or iHeartRadio.com and just simply put in Bashani Radio and you can hear us worldwide, ladies and gentlemen, worldwide. Thank you once again. And like always, ain't nothing gonna happen unless you make it happen. I love you and you can't do a damn thing about it. Good night.
Thank you for listening to another great episode of BashaniRadio.com. Make sure to like Bashani Radio on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. All of our social media connections are located on BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything.